So let's understand about contemporary theories of motivation. It is the present thought of people that these are the theories which are more relevant to our society in present scenario. But naturally, there are multiples of theories and no theory can be unquestionable. So let's understand about these theories in detail. These are self-determination theory, job enlargement theory, goal setting theory, self-efficacy theory, equity theory given by J. Stacey Adams, interactional theory, and Victor Room's expectancy theory. We'll go into detail about each and every theory. Let's understand about self-determination theory. In this theory, employees have got control over their actions. They can define what to do. So they should be given autonomy, where there is a positive connection with others and they take ways to achieve the competence to achieve the goals. So they will be highly motivated to go for training programs and skill development programs so that they can achieve their goals in a better way. Once they have got the right goal in front of them and they have got autonomy how to achieve that, the right kind of resources are given to them, then naturally they are self-determined to achieve that goal by all means and they will be highly motivated to do that. It should be in consistence with the interest of the person and core values of the person so that he will be highly passionate about that and dedicated to achieve what is required. So in this case we have seen it is mainly the intrinsic reasons which are going to motivate the person. Then comes job enlargement. Here, when a person is doing the same kind of work for a long time, you can understand he'll get bored because it will be a monotonous kind of job that he is doing. So when you make the investment of individuals, physical, cognitive and emotive energies, if we want to put it in the right perspective as far as all three kinds of energies of a person, of an employee, to perform the job is concerned, then what one should do? One should engage the employees in the meaningfulness of the work. When the person does some work which he knows the significance of that, then he will be motivated to do that. Secondly, his alignment of individuals' values with those of the organization should be there. That means the culture of his family values that he has got, the national culture, all those things, if they are in alignment with the organization culture and values, then only because of the coherence of the two, he will be more passionate to work towards that and he will be enjoying that work. And secondly, he should be, if an inspiring leadership is there, whom he is going to follow, should give him inspiration by emotional connect, empathy, and the significance of his work to a greater extent to the whole of the organization and to the society as well, then definitely he would love to work towards it. However, some people criticize this, that this is more towards the job attitude of the person rather than only a job enlargement that is occurring, which is motivating a person. But whenever the job enlargement is occurring, that means he is supposed to work as a multi-skilled person and doing multiple things, what will happen? Gradually his number of working hours will increase. Although he is motivated and dedicated, he is working and he is giving more importance to his work than all other things, in which case he may stay in the office, say from morning 8 to night 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, and this will lead to work-family conflict. So the work-life balance will also be adversely affected. So with this, let's learn about one more contemporary theory, and that is Edwin Locke's goal setting theory. According to Edwin Locke, when a person is setting the goals which are specific, which are difficult to achieve, and when there is a participation of the person in setting the goals, at the same time he gets the feedback of the goals, it will help him in better motivation to work. At the same time, there are certain other factors regarding goal commitment, task characteristics, and national culture also, which is going to affect the motivation of the individual employee. So let's understand this in some details. What is goal specificity? It means that the goals that are set for the individual employee should be highly specific. As we know, in objectives or goals, the mnemonic normally used is SMART goals. What is SMART? S-M-A-R-T stands for, S stands for specificity, M is for measurable, A is for attainable or achievable, R is for relevant, realistic, and T is for time bound. That means when the goal set for the individual employee, as we have seen in MBO theory, management by objectives also, that initially based on the strategic objectives, the goals of the organization is set with the mission statement and all, and it is percolated down to the departmental goals and then to the individual employee's goals, which will ultimately achieve the organizational goals. So the goal should be absolutely specific for the person, what he is supposed to do, what is the standard kept for that goal for him, and the weightage of that also should be given so that he knows the importance and significance of that goal. At the same time, it should be absolutely measurable. It should not be an intangible goal saying that I am going to increase the communication in the organization for an HR person. It has to be clearly mentioned that what we mean by increasing the communication, by what percentage as compared to last year, within 3 months, how many people will be covered, what exactly will be given in the communication, whether you are going to increase the number of computers, say by 50 in the department, by 3 months, whether you are going to train all the people in the computer skills within 2 months or within 1 month or within 15 days, say 50 people will be trained within 15 days, and by this training also, what exactly we mean by this, every person will be able to use the Microsoft Office in the form of Word, Excel, PowerPoint presentation, etc., etc. So your goal should be absolutely specific and measurable. At the same time, it should be achievable. It should not be an impossible goal to achieve. And it should be absolutely relevant to the goals of the organization. And it should be time bound, that it should be stated within 3 months this goal will be achieved, within 6 months this goal will be achieved, within 9 months or 10 months this goal will be achieved, and so on and so forth. So that when there is a specific goal in front of a person, the target is clear what he is supposed to achieve, then it will motivate him to work more conscientiously, more passionately to achieve that goal. Then comes goal difficulty. If very easy goals are given, naturally people are not going to be putting in so much of effort. So the goal should not be very easy, it should be stretchable, it should be difficult to achieve. Then only these kind of challenging goals will improve the focus of a person to achieve that. It will energize a person with higher persistence to achieve that goal. It will lead to some innovative ideas and creativity in the person's mind to achieve that goal in a better way. So whatever problem is there, he is going to think about it, out of box thinking if required, so that he can achieve that goal, and that's what will motivate him further to achieve that goal. At the same time, the person should be persistent in achieving that goal with full vigor. He should have clear direction. The leadership should be such who is going to inspire him and give him all the resources required for that. There should be goal feedback given to him by the immediate supervisor to identify what are the gaps so that he can fill up those gaps whenever they are pointed out. In fact, it should be more from within that the person should get the feedback, because he knows exactly what is expected. So he himself should introspect and find out whether he is going in the right direction within the time period that he is supposed to achieve the goal, whether he is going to achieve that by that time period or not, and accordingly energize himself and put in more efforts to achieve that goal within the time period, the specific goal that has been given and the difficult goal that is there to achieve. The other factors are goal commitment. When a person is participating in goal setting, as in management by objective also we have seen, when the individual sits with the immediate superior and participates in goal setting, then it will make him more committed to achieve that goal. When he is publicly telling about this is what he is going to achieve, it is going to make him more focused and more committed to achieve that goal. For example, suppose you have told somebody who is smoking, say 10 cigarettes per day, and the doctor has told him to quit smoking because it is highly dangerous to the health of a person. It will lead to heart attack, it will lead to many of the respiratory diseases, it will lead to cancers of anywhere in the body, etc. People know these things because they have learned this literature in various newspapers, in various magazines, etc. But still, it is difficult for them to quit because it is highly addictive. And willpower is needed to do that. So, when the doctor has told a person this, especially when he has lost one of his relative who was also a smoker due to cancer of lung or cancer of larynx, or due to a heart attack which was mainly attributed to his smoking habit, naturally he will be more motivated at that time. And suppose he has told that yes, I will be quitting smoking from today itself. But if he has told this in public, in front of his family, in front of his friends, in front of the doctor, loudly, then what happens? When he has made the goal public, it is going to create a great vigor in his mind to consistently see to it that he doesn't touch a cigarette. So this is how, when the goals are made public, it will lead to goal commitment in a better way. Similarly, when a person is having internal locus of control, then he'll be highly committed to achieve the goal. Now, what's this internal locus of control? A person is said to be having internal locus of control when he takes the responsibility for whatever he is doing himself. He doesn't say any time that I failed because these are the external circumstances which were responsible for that. Suppose a boy sitting in SSC exam gets only 60% marks instead of expected 80%, which he was aspiring to get, and suppose he says that I got this because my elder brother or my elder sister was getting married, at that time, and I had to use lot of time for the preparation of that marriage. That's why I got 60% instead of 80%. That is a person having external locus of control. If he is having internal locus of control, he will be committed to achieving the goal of getting 80% and more, because he knew well in advance that this is the date of the marriage of his sister. He would have started studying much earlier. He would have taken pains in studying at night or early morning to complete the portion and revise the portion well in advance, so that he would have got his goal achieved. So that's the internal locus of control when a person is getting, having, it will lead to goal commitment for a person. Similarly, in an organization, those employees who are having internal locus of control, they are not going to blame any of their colleagues or superior, but they are going to concentrate and achieve the goal by their own efforts, taking care of all the problems or obstacles that may come into play. Then comes task characteristics. If the task is not very complex, if he has got the full competency of achieving that, he is a well-learned person regarding that task, as far as the knowledge, skills and abilities are concerned, and if he is independent in achieving that task fulfilled, then it is more likely that he is going to achieve the task. If he is interdependent, that if somebody else has completed partly that work and then only he can finish it, then probably if the previous person has not done the work at the right time or not done the work properly, then it will be difficult for him to correct it, because he is not expert in that field, and then that kind of task characteristics, it will be difficult for him to achieve goal at times. Now, as far as the national culture is concerned, also it is going to affect the person's achievement of the goal. For example, in Japan, they have got more a collectivistic culture, while in America, it is more of an individualistic culture. So, if group goals are given, then Japanese people will be more effective in achieving the goals, because they believe in team, they believe in together everybody achieves more, that kind of culture, and they believe even in the rewards in the form of team rewards rather than an individual reward. So they are going to be a very coherent team, they are going to help each other in achieving the group goal in much better way as compared to American people, where they may be more towards the individualistic goals kind of mentality. So they will having more commitment when they are going to have a group goal, as far as the collectivistic culture country is concerned. Similarly, there is a greater commitment in high power distance culture. Now, what we mean by high power distance? That means in this national culture, what happens, people are ready to follow their leaders, they rever their leaders, they obey their leaders to the utmost, and they expect that whatever they are telling, they should do it. And that's the power of the leader, that they accept willingly. Like in India, we have got a high power distance culture. So, we are more committed to achieve whatever the superior tells us. And that's what the goal setting theory tells us, that these are the various factors which can affect the person's achievement of the goals based on this theory given by Edwin Locke. However, if we see the feedback should be more individual, then it self-feedback is better than somebody else giving feedback, also one should remember that. With this, let's go to the next theory, that is self-efficacy theory. It is also known as social cognitive theory, or social learning theory, which has been developed by Albert Bandura. He is one of the great HR experts who has given us about social learning theory, which we have learned in the learning part also. So person's belief about himself being capable of carrying out the task successfully is known as self-efficacy. So wherever a person is having high self-efficacy, he will be having high engagement in the work, and the performance of an individual will increase, and it will overall lead to better achievement of the organizational goals. Now, Albert Bandura has given certain ways how to increase self-efficacy of a person. The first thing is an active mastery. What we mean by that? One has to enact an act. So when you are going to, like an actor in a film, when you are going to enact the character for which you are acting, if you have got mastery in going into details and depth of that character, and you enact that character perfectly well, then it will lead to your efficacy. You are able to do that role very easily and very successfully. Then comes vicarious modeling. That means you are modeling a person whom you revere. Usually, most of us are having some idol in our life. For example, say Shah Rukh Khan has got the idol of Dilip Kumar. Mukesh was revering Saigal. So, whenever a person is impressed with somebody who is very successful in life, if we are going to model that person, if we are going to imitate that person, we first look at how that person is doing. Then we try to imitate that person in front of a mirror, and we see that we are able to do that successfully. Then we do this thing in public with our friends, family, and later in more public places, and we get success in doing in a similar way. Then it will motivate us to do further, and our self-efficacy will improve. Then comes verbal persuasion, which means gaining more confidence by others convincing one of the possessing skills which are essential for achieving the success. So it is a persuasion given orally by others that this is what you do and you will succeed. And then comes the arousal, which is energized condition in which individual is psyched up and tends to perform better. So this is how the self-efficacy of a person will improve, and he will be more successful in achieving and highly motivated to achieve the goals, individual as well as the organization. What's the implication of this self-efficacy theory? Whenever you are going to organize a training program for your employees, if you consider how you can improve the self-efficacy of a person, you can tell a person in training program to do a role model, whereby inactive mastery and vicarious modeling can be looked into, and the facilitator of the training program is going to give verbal persuasion and arouse the interest in that person in the training program, whereby his self-efficacy will improve. And similarly, in any of the learning required for the skill development, knowledge development, or ability development, or even the behavioral modification, as far as the training and development program is concerned, if you are going to use these principles, it is going to help the person learn better, and we are successful in making that person more self-efficacious in the work that is going to do and more motivated to do that work. However, critics of self-efficacy theory believe that intelligent, conscientiousness and emotionally stable people usually tend to have much more self-efficacy rather than we being teaching them to achieve that. So let's understand about the J. Stacey Adams equity theory of motivation. Equity, which means equal. So let's understand, whenever the employees are there in the organization, they are going to compare job rewards with their inputs and outcome. So outcome input ratio will be assessed with respect to similar others in the system most of the time. For example, when a class of say 40 students who are undergoing MBA program in HR, after completing the graduation, they have developed good friendship because they have been learning together for 2 years. They have been most of the time working together in groups for the presentation, for the role play, etc. throughout the 2 years. So they naturally develop good friendship, and many of them then become even the members of the HR associations in the city or the country. Now suppose after graduation and after completing the MBA with say around 60% marks, one of the candidate gets a placement in one company and that person is offered say 50,000 per month as a salary. He is very happy that he's got a good job. After 6 months, suppose one of his friend is appointed in the same company and that person is offered 70,000 salary for the similar kind of job, and this person who is already working there comes to know about that, what will happen? He is going to compare his salary with the newcomer, he is going to compare the qualification and experience of that person, which is same. So naturally now he will get tension. Earlier he was really happy about the job, but now since he has compared himself, the inputs that he puts in and the outcome input ratio, what is the outcome of this input that he is putting in, with compare, when he is comparing with somebody else in the system who has recently joined, now he feels that he doesn't get what he deserves. He will become jealous of the other person at times, or he will go to his HR to find out what is the reason why he is not given the right what he deserves as compared to the new person on the contrary. So usually people are going to get tension because of this, and then he is going to compare various things to, and then he is going to reduce this tension by various ways. One is self-insight, that means he can compare himself in a different position within the current organization also, not only with somebody else, but earlier if he has worked in one department and he is transferred to other department, the time of his promotion was there due, and now in other department he is not getting the promotion, then also he is going to compare that and he will get tension. There can be self outside, that means if he has worked in some other organization and there what is the salary range and all that, is going to compare that. Other inside, that's how we have seen in the example that somebody else has come inside, or other outside, even in other industry, if one of his friend is working, what kind of salary and perks he is getting, if he is doing, having the same kind of expertise, same kind of education, same kind of qualification and experience. So these are the various ways in which a person compares himself, and then he looks into whether equitable salary he is getting or not. So J. Stacy Adams has told us that people who are experiencing such inequity tend to choose either by changing their input. That means they feel that this organization, some of them will feel that this organization doesn't deserve. They are doing injustice to me, so probably I should also not work to that extent. So his quality of work goes down, his absenteeism increases, and he feels that, okay, if they are giving me 50,000, they are giving him 70,000, let me give 50,000 worth of work rather than 70,000. So he changes his input. If he is having an internal locus of control, at times he feels that, okay, they are giving him 70,000 for this work, I will prove myself that I am doing much better than him, and I am going to give them high quality products and services in my job area, and my superiors should be very happy about my work and they should increase my salary or they should give me promotion. So they change input in a better way. So that's also one way of changing input to reduce the tension that he has got. Secondly, he can change the outcome by changing the input. Some people will distort their perception of self, saying that I am not that smart enough, I was not having that kind of negotiation skills during my interview, and that's why I was offered less. So they distort their perception of self, and this is how they may reduce their tension. While some of them distort the perceptions of others, saying that that fellow is very close to the top management, he is relative of them, that's why probably they have given him more. Or some of them choose a different referent, saying that other two friends of mine who are working in some other organization, they are getting much less than what I am getting, so forget, if somebody is getting more also it's okay. While some of them even leave the organization and change the job. So this is how, by different ways, people, when they experience inequity, they are changing their way of working, their behavior will be different, and that's how they are changing their tension into something which is equitable. Then comes interactional justice. That's also one of the important contemporary or the new theory of motivation. A person's view, if we see, it is the level to which he or she is treated with dignity, concern and respect. Everybody has got self-dignity and self-respect. So they expect that their superiors are behaving in such a way that their self-dignity is preserved and people are concerned for their career development, and they should be taken care of and they should be empathetically treated by their superiors and colleagues. There are three kinds of justice: interactional justice, distributive justice and procedural justice. Whenever people are interacting with each other, their dignity should be taken care of. People should show concern for any problems that person is having, and they should be guided and supported in their work. That's where the interactional justice comes. Then there is a distributive justice, where whatever benefit the organization gets because of the group, they should be distributed equally among all based on their merit. And whatever is being done, there should be a clear-cut standard operating procedure, and one should be communicated that effectively so that one knows exactly why something is being done. Suppose out of four candidates, only one person is promoted, then all four candidates should be well in advance told about the criteria for promotion. And then justice should be done to follow all these criteria, and accordingly one person should be promoted rather than somebody else. So based on seniority, merit, suppose both the criteria are there, based on the performance rating, and why this rating is given based on the quantitative measure of their goals achievement, then one knows exactly this is the procedure of getting a promotion. One knows exactly what other has achieved, and then even if one doesn't get promotion as compared to other three candidates, he is not going to be mentally disturbed by that because he feels that procedural justice is done. So that's where the person will not be demotivated if proper procedural justice is done. Supervisors should share all the information, so communication should be clear, crisp, so that there is no secrecy kept as far as the requirement of the employee is concerned, and it means that whatever interaction is occurring, justice is maintained, and one should divert the efforts towards problem source, where exactly is the problem, what is the source of the problem, and then try to sort out that problem which helps in interaction with justice and motivating a person in a better way.